actions, daily seasonal and individual duties, and the resultant enjoyment and suffering. Okay. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad says, quote, "The Atma, according to his actions, attains a situation. By good actions, he becomes good. By sinful action, he becomes sinful. By punya, the jiva attains happiness. By papa, the jiva attains suffering." Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, 4.4.5. The Bhagavatam says, "In order to maintain his so-called family and society, the fool, burning with anxiety, laden with unfulfilled hopes, performs all kinds of sinful activities." Srimad Bhagavatam 3.37. The meaning of these two statements is clear. The jiva, through his coverings of gross and subtle material bodies, becomes bound by samsara and experiences suffering through actions of punya and pap. The Sarvagya Shukta quoted in Bhagavat Sandarbha says, "The Supreme Lord is full of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, being embraced by his energies, Pladini and Samvit." The jiva experiences so many sufferings in the material world, being covered by his own ignorance. Okay, so here, notice here, so what's, now what is missing here? The Supreme Lord is full of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Okay, that's complete. Being embraced by his energies, Ladini and Sambit. So what's not there? Sandini. So Sandini is? In these three? Yeah, knowledge. No, but that would be, I'm talking about the Lord. Okay? So it means you're Sambit Sandini. Okay, so that is existence. So Krishna is existence. Right, so then he's being embraced by Shladini and some big potencies. Right, so in other words, the activities and the goal and the pleasure potency, and the living entity experiences so many sufferings, being covered by his own ignorance. Okay, so then what is this showing here? The Lord is situated in eternal existence. The jiva, his situation is, what's the comparable point? But in its reversed, it's in reflected state. Ignorance, right? Because the Sandini potency applied on the spiritual then creates all the facilities and everything's there, all the transcendental realm. While in this material world, it creates the gross body, right? All the field of activities, all the different elements that are there. So in other words, the Lord is situated in eternity, and the jiva is situated in ignorance. So we see the Lord is happy, the jivas are not. Also here is then what's being inferred by jivas experiences so many sufferings in the material world. Right? Because with Krishna, then it mentions full of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, and then he's embraced by his potency, Ladini and Samvit, so then Sandini is inferred. Right. So in here, then we're saying he's covered by his own ignorance, and then says so many sufferings in the material world. So what's being inferred?
Temporary situation.
Okay, but that'll be connected with ignorance, because that'll be the field. There's something else. How do you get experiences and sufferings? It means think in these three. We dealt with one, so which two are missing?
Consciousness
is there, but basically we're saying here that's ignorance, so that's being brought out. But we're talking about the working. In other words, we're trying to see how this Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana apply in this verse, being used in the form of here eternity, knowledge, and bliss, right? Or Samvit, Sandini, Ladini. What is the Samvit potency applied on the Chit Shakti? What does it generate? No, no, no. Ladini will be the other one. Ladini applied gives pleasure. Okay?
What gives the jiva ignorance?
Well, ignorance is his consciousness. In other words, we brought out eternity knowledge and bliss with the Lord, but now we brought out ignorance and the sufferings of the living entity. So what are we connecting this to? Because always there's a reflection. You understand? If you can see through this in this way, you see the structures on which the philosophy is discussed. Does it make sense? Then it's more clear. It's more consistent. You can always bring it in and see it from the different angles. Yes. Yes. So what does the chit do when we were reading before? What does the chit potency do when it's applied? What does it generate? Of course, we're going to get a result from an activity of Abhideya. But while we're performing the Abhideya...
Oh, then it sows the seed for the...
It's a seed, but there are experiences. Remember the moods.
Yeah.
Right, all the moods that are there in performing an activity are generated because of the influence of the sambit potency. So these moods then, and results, so and the result ends up, so he suffers. So in other words, in the Abhideya he's suffering because the moods are not favorable, and his results that he gets aren't favorable. Because of it all being based on ignorance. Right? Well, Krishna is, you know, he's full of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. So then whatever he does, he's embraced by the sambit and ladini potencies. So the activity, his pastimes that he performs are always full of, you know, nice moods and nice experiences. Understand? So he's the supreme. We're very small. It's reflected. But it's the same principle. Does that make sense? So in this way you can catch it. Otherwise we just see this, oh yeah, I've heard that so many times, just another verse like that. But this is bringing out very technical points. Because of ignorance, therefore, the application of the samvit and sandini and ladini potencies doesn't give him a good result. It's whatever happinesses you get in this world, but he's not getting them. So therefore, where there should be, then there's frustration. Right? There'll be suffering, because then there'll be anger, and then from anger you'll do something that you wish you didn't, you'll suffer from that. So all the whole connection of the material, do we see? So all these verses that we hear all the time, then much of the time, oh yeah, I've heard that, now let's move on to something more, you know, technical or more rasik or more something. But the point is whatever technicality or whatever taste, in tattva and rasa, they're there and still those same verses. It's just a matter of knowing how to mine them. So that's why then, where we're discussing, means we did, you know, in the other class, was we went through all the definitions, right? And showing how one set of, one perspective may have, you know, 4, 5, 6, 10 different ways it can be presented, which each has its own little subtle nuance. We tend to, we hear one of them, and yes, we know that, because we already know that principle, but we don't necessarily make the connection between it. I and mine and the controller and enjoyer, we don't necessarily take as it's exactly the same thing. Right? Does that make sense? I am the controller. If it's mine, I can enjoy it. If it's not mine, how do I enjoy it? Does that make sense? Or the controller and enjoyer, or envy and attachment. But you get the sense of, mundane sense of I comes from envy. You have to be envious of God, therefore you think I am God. And then attachment means what you want to enjoy is what you're attached to. Without attachment, you won't endeavor, you won't get the results. Or if you get the results, if you're not attached to it, who cares? So they're all the same thing. They're just taking slightly different angles for different applications. It's the same principle, slightly different detail. So the idea is that if that's seen, then you can see in these verses what is going on. Right? Atma, according to his actions, attains the situation. Right? We understand that this is karma. You do something, you get a situation. Right? And so then that will give you that result. That's what we, you know, so there you're dealing with free will and predestiny. By according to his actions, free will, he obtains the situation, predestiny. That destiny is, you have to have a situation to perform an action. So his predestiny is the field for his new free will. Right? Or we can say, his actions attains the situation. But the situation, that is sambandha. So how do you get from an action, do you get sambandha? You're supposed to get prayojana. So how did we get sambandha? What principle have we discussed that makes that happen? Yes, because whatever you get in the result, it's the happiness there that you call some the prayojana. But the thing that you've attained, the observable item, that moves back into the field of activities, part becomes just increases the kshetra. So immediately it moves back. So therefore, it creates a situation. In between the action and the situation, there may be some pleasure or pain, like that. But it ends up as a situation, right? You got the house, you had that 5 minutes of happiness, and then you have the house and pay the mortgage for the next 30 years. That's the situation. Does that make sense? Right. Yeah, so like that is you can see so many things in here. So that's the idea. Shastra Chakshus means to be able to see with the eyes of Shastra. Otherwise you can't see with the eyes of Shastra. You'll end up like this morning, those unfortunate persons who can't see the Shastra in life around them. They think it has no meaning. And therefore, doing whatever you're doing is just as good as anything else. Right? Because they can't see it. Like that. It's just like, give an example. It's like Calcutta. If you know what the culture is, and you know what a gentleman is, you know what the refined aspects of the Indian culture are, you go to Calcutta, you can see it. But if you don't know that, you won't see it. You just see this dirty, crazy place with millions of people and it's just, you know, just chaos. But if you know what you're looking for, then you find it. Otherwise, how did the people, they go out, you know, from the East Coast of America out to the West Coast, and they take a little pan with them, right? Like a plate with little edges on it, right? And then they go to a river that's just full of water and rocks and silt and this and that, and they can get gold out of there. Right? You know, there's some austerity, they freeze their fingers off, but they get the gold. But a normal person would just go and just go, here's a river, where's the gold? You know, unless there's, you know, bars there that says 99.9% on it, then it's not gold. So that's the point, is they even have the verses in front of them. They are even able to translate those verses from Sanskrit to English and still not be able to see. So Shastra Chakshus means the ability to see. What you hear from Shastra, you can look at the world through your senses and see that Shastra being applied. That means then you understand Shastra. That's Shastra Chakshus. You've memorized the philosophy, that's a good start. But until you can see it actually happening around you, then it actually hasn't come to the maturity of that knowledge has not been appreciated yet. Right? But that only comes by practice. So if you don't practice it, how you'll get it? And then they'll say, where is it? I don't believe. So it's just like how much you have the guy who says, we say there's God. They say, where is God? Show him to me. You know, what do you do for that person? They don't have the qualification to see. So those who will take this and say that this philosophy and culture don't apply now in modern world, they don't have the adhikar They're just like that person that says, show me God or I don't believe it. Because even if you show them, they still can't understand. Because they don't have the qualifications to appreciate. Does this make sense? We always have to remember, it doesn't mean these people are that. Right? Just like the soul is never the kshetra. But he thinks he is. So Prabhupada would tell devotees, you're acting like a shudra. He wouldn't say you are a shudra. You know, you're acting like a shudra. You're lamenting, or you're not seeing it through shastra, or you're just trying to be, you know, independent and you know, just absorbed in your senses, or whatever you like. So, like a shudra. Right? So in this way, due to material contamination, then these things come up. And so they're acting like that. Materialists are like that, technically they're not, but they really identify this way. But even the devotees may get overwhelmed by it. Doesn't mean they become this. That's why it's very dangerous to talk about it in too strong a sense. Right? Like this one morning, the person wants to know, who is that? We want to know names. No, we don't need to know names. We're discussing concepts here. Because otherwise then it starts a witch hunt. But that doesn't make you more Krishna conscious. You know what I'm saying? No Christian ever became a better Christian because they burnt so many witches. You understand? No, you become better because you apply it in your own life. Just because someone who's not applying it you get rid of, okay, that's nice. But unless you apply it in your own life, you don't get any benefit. Does that make sense? So that's why it's important that each individual can see through the eyes of Shastra. Right? Right. So that's why the Acharyas give us this work, these different, you know, these books and these purports, so that we can see like that. You know. So by hearing, by sadhu sangha, by practice, right? Then these things develop. In Paramatma Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami says that Maya has two propensities, knowledge and ignorance. Knowledge is born of real mercy of Maya. The ignorance function is the special energy of Maya to punish the Jiva for his offenses. Right? He further says, quote, this ignorance has two functions called the Avarana Atmika function and the Vikshepa Atmika function. The first function covers the Jiva's knowledge of his natural relationship with the Lord. The second function gives rise to other types of knowledge, throwing the Jiva into ignorance. Right? Prabhupada mentions this, the covering potency, the throwing potency. First she covers you, because then you don't know who you are. Then she throws you into whatever it is you think you are. Like that. But here it also says that, but that is the ignorance function. It has these two parts. She also has the point of her actual mercy is actual that knowledge of your relationship. Because we always have to remember, Mahamaya is Yogamaya. They're the same person. She just has two different portfolios. Right? So when she acts as Maya, we call her Maya. When she acts as Yogamaya, we call her Yogamaya. Right? It's not two different people, it's one person. Just two different portfolios. So, you know, for one portfolio she dresses in one way, and for the other portfolio she dresses in another way. Like that. You know, one's pleasant, one carries around that big kind of chopper, you know, cuts off heads. Okay. So that means is the more you uncover the natural relationship, then the less you can be thrown into other kinds of knowledge. Right? In other words, mundane knowledge, if it's not in connection with your knowledge of your relationship with the Lord, you will be driven further into ignorance. Does that make sense? So unless you're very well situated as I am servant of God, studying any form of mundane knowledge will take you farther away from Krishna. That's just the way she works. You know? if someone complains, no, that's not like that. Then it's like saying, you take a rock, you let go of it, it goes down. Oh, no, it doesn't work like that. That's the way it works. Because first is covering, then is throwing. So if you're not covered, how do you get thrown? Right? And this throwing means gives rise to other types of knowledge. And those knowledge result in ignorance. That's why knowledge can be called avidya. Right? So there's knowledge, vidya, and avidya. So knowledge means it's in connection with Krishna. And if it's not in connection with Krishna, the same exact knowledge is avidya. It's very simple. Right? Black and white, right? They say the Western paradigm likes it's 0 or 100%. So here it is. You know, if it's a connection with Krishna, then it's fine. If it's not a connection with Krishna, it will take you away from Krishna, and it has nothing to do with devotional service. The same thing. That's why it's not a problem, as we're discussing this morning, it's not a problem whether someone wears pants, you know, or, you know, they eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. That's not the problem. The problem is what's the motive behind that? What is the consciousness of that? If it's in connection with Krishna, what does it matter? You know what I'm saying? But if it's not in connection with Krishna, it does make a difference. You know what I'm saying? You know, if you have an opportunity to use gold in Krishna's service or iron in Krishna's service, then, you know, you take the gold. Right? If you don't have gold, then you use iron. You know what I'm saying? You can't get a gold plate for Krishna, okay, you get a stainless steel plate, okay. You know? But if now you're going to make up a philosophy that the stainless steel plate is just as good as the gold plate, in fact it's actually better, then that's a problem. Right? That is bogus. You don't have the gold, you only have the stainless steel, then it's fine. Don't worry, because it's the mood. It's the important thing is connected to Krishna. But it's not your preference, but it's being practical. You know, you'd like to go to work in your dhoti, but you can't. The office won't allow it. So you wear whatever they expect you to wear. But it's not your preference. You know what I'm saying? Does it make sense? So this trip to bring the Vedic culture down to Indian, and India is just another mundane country, and America is another mundane country. So therefore, America and India are on the same level. And of course, America is always better than India. So therefore, it's better. You understand? You see the logical progression that's being used? But the point is India is the burnt remnants of the Vedic culture. America never was. Therefore, the Indian, what we know, is based on the remnants of the Vedic. And Prabhupada understands, you know, what little bit is left is still useful. Therefore, he used the term dead elephant or live elephant. It's worth a lakh of rupees. So that's the whole, even if it's dead, it's still based on the Vedic culture. Right? So it's being based on those principles, because the principle is what's important. It's hard to find those principles in the non-Vedic cultures. Right? So you can't compare them like that. It's a very clever trick. It sounds logical, but it's not. It's not. Right? Always remember, you ever seen pictures of moguls riding around on their horses? Right? You see any saris? No. So then when the moguls came into India and their ladies are wearing saris, where'd they get them from? Think about that one before they say, oh, all the sorry, this and that is all introduced by the Mughals. They wear skins, they wear, you know, this and that, that's out there. They're, you know, they're a wild bunch of people. And to come in and be situated on the peacock throne, that all comes from India. It did not come from Mongolia. Let me tell you. Not one stone on the peacock throne came from Mongolia. Don't let the academics trick you, because the academics' purpose is to destroy India and to make the West look like it's superior to India. That's their whole and sole purpose. They don't have another purpose. It's not, you know, just, you know, open knowledge that's there. Otherwise, they'd be open to the ideas, but they're not. They're very closed. As soon as anything doesn't go their way to prove the superiority of the West, immediately it's interpolation. And I'm talking about what's coming out of the mouth of devotees. I'm not talking about the karmis, what they say. They just say it's interpolation. But they themselves don't know what is scripture, doesn't know what all these different things are. So what is their position? Indology was a department developed to destroy India. The British started Indology by Christians to destroy the Vedic culture. So if you're going to go into it, then you should end up destroying that department and destroying their concepts. Then you've done a good job. If you come out like them, you know, like pigs in a suit, then what's the use? You know, I already read that book in seventh grade. You know? You understand the book? Animal Farm. So we don't need, you know, more pigs in suits. So that was Paramatma Sundarbha 54. Yes. Yes, why not? Of course you can, but it's a matter you can use. Don't identify with it and be attached to it and say it's better. But what is the Western cloth that Prabhupada did recommend you use? Go ahead, say it.
I don't know.
You don't know. Okay, what did he say? He said, you dress like an up-to-date American gentleman. You see, you go to America, and you go to the temples, and you see the devotees in karmic clothes. Tell me if you find one gentleman. I didn't see. Neither did I see it in Australia, neither did I saw it in England. So, if we want to say, Prabhupada said, go for it, go out and buy yourself a suit. But devotees, the background they come from, they don't come from a high class enough background to wear that kind of clothes and feel comfortable. They'll feel just as uncomfortable as that as they will in a dhoti. So what do they want to wear? They want to be able to wear their jeans and their t-shirts. You understand? So this is what Vyasadeva is talking about Narad Muni is talking about to Vyasadeva, is that people will see that you have this rule, but they won't understand the restrictions. Right? Mahabharat, he's given all this culture and all that, but they won't see that Krishna consciousness is actually the real point. They'll just see what you can do. They won't notice the restrictions. Therefore, he wrote the Bhagavatam to make sure it's very clear. You wear kami clothes, you go out there. What do the Mormons wear when they go out? Is it Mormons? Which are the ones that's really fast growing? Fastest growing?
Mormons.
What do they wear when they're out on the street preaching? What do they wear? Right. Okay. Do you see one of our devotees out in the suit preaching? Sariputta used to wear a suit. He's the only one I know. There may have been others. He's the only one I know. Wears a suit. He would go out preaching. He'd wear a suit. Mormons wear suits, and we're going to say, oh, well, that's, you know, being or that won't be this, that. They're growing way faster than we are. And Buddhists, what do they go out in when they preach? Burnt orange robes. So if you go out on the street like this, up to somebody, you know, in the cities, they're going to ask you if you're a Buddhist. Do you know that? Why? Because there are no Hare Krishnas out there preaching and wearing their dhotis and this and that. They're too embarrassed. That's why they're saying this. Like that. Do you think the 500,000 Catholics that went to Australia this summer, you know, for the Catholic Day or the Youth Week, they were upset that all their priests and their pope were clothes that were like 1,000 years old? Completely out of date. Were they disturbed? Did the rest of Australia say that, you know, that's stupid? Oh, look at those priests. Look at how stupid they dress. Right? People avoid going to the Vatican, you know, city and everything because everybody there dressed really stupid and old-fashioned, right? You understand? All it is they're uncomfortable themselves. And because of that, they say these things. Because if they meant it, then they would do what Prabhupada said. You want to wear karmic clothes? Fine. But look like a gentleman. Go out and buy some nice clothes. You know, if you have to wear, it actually will not work if you wore dhoti. Like, let us say we have a, what do you call those things? Interfaith gathering, like all different religions. Okay? What did the devotees go to that gathering in? Some, mostly karmic clothes. Right? What did the nuns go in? That's my point. The other religions, if they're priests, they wear the thing. See, it's like this. Okay, if the common person doesn't want to wear it, that's fine. But what's wrong if the temple devotees and those, you know, that are projecting them, presenting and living the lifestyle of priests, what's wrong if they dress as Hare Krishna priests? Everybody understands priests wear weird clothes. No religion has problem that priests wear weird clothes. But we're not giving that space. We're not saying it's all right for this one to do. He's a full-time, he's a temple devotee, he's a priest. So what's wrong with him wearing that? Okay, the congregational devotee wants to wear something else, great. Who do we care? But to say that the temple devotees don't need to wear that, and that's fanatic, and we're not fitting in, and people are alienated. No one's alienated. You know? Anyone's alienated that the Dalai Lama wears robes? Anyone is? Anyone's alienated the Pope wears a funny hat? Or the cardinals wear, you know, weirdo hats and robes? Or bishops? You know, does anybody get disturbed that the rabbis wear weird stuff? Right? We wear chuddas on top of our shirts. They wear them underneath their shirt. Is anyone complaining? Right? I saw in New York, just a few months ago, a Hasid walking down the street, you know, in his shoes, you know, stockings and knickers. Knickers means pants that only go down to the knees. I'm not talking cargo jeans. I'm talking the ones that go down tight and button. Things that they used to wear a few hundred years ago. You know, with their beard, with their, you know, hayusikas sticking out the side of their head, and their hat, you know, two hats on top of their head. Like that, you know, and their chudder underneath their shirt. And no one on that street blinked an eye. And that's New York, modern. No one cracked up, no one rolled around the street, no one moved to the other side of the street, no one freaked out, no one threw stones, nothing. So what's the problem? The problem is in the heart of the devotees who say that. They themselves don't have the conviction of faith, which is fine. But then that should be your own personal anarta that you have to deal with. Don't try to make it into something that everybody else, you know, has to be like you. If your anarta everybody has, then it's okay. You know what I'm saying? If everyone divorces, then it doesn't matter if there's a divorce. What's the big deal? But if no one divorces and you're the only one that wants to divorce, then you got a problem. So you can either get it together, be quiet about it, or try to make everybody else, you know, think that it's good. Or break up everybody else's marriage, and then you feel good about yourself. You know what I'm saying? These angles are purely mundane. Because if they weren't, why aren't they dressed? Okay, you want to wear dressed like Prabhupada said. Right? Read Lilamrita right there. And, you know, what it was? I'm not sure what the dates were. 68, 69, maybe even 67. In Boston. Right? Prabhupada's going to a program with Satsvarup and Prajumna. They're wearing suits. In those days, the devotees wore karmic clothes. They wore suits. That was standard, suits. Prabhupada said, up-to-date gentlemen, they wear suits. You know what I'm saying? But they had a shaved head and they had tilak on. And they went to public programs, they went on television, they went on the radio. They met all kinds of people like that. Some devotees hitchhiked. Because when Prabhupada was going back to, I think, somewhere on the East Coast or on the West Coast, they hitchhiked from San Francisco, right? Hippie headquarters of the world. From there to, from the West Coast to the East Coast, in what? Suits. It says right there in the Lilamrita. You understand? So the point is, up to date means it should be fashionable. So it means you want to fit in, then be fashionable. But this, you know, devotee, it's not quite devotional, not quite, you know, fashionable, you know, slovenliness that devotees wear. It's so obvious they're devotees. Because they're the only ones that wear these funny, baggy, misfitting, you know, stuff. Does that make sense? So that's the point. We have no problem with Western dress, Western food, Western this, that. We don't have any problem. But you make it into a philosophy that is superior to the Vedic. We got a problem with that. You know what I'm saying? If that's what you practically need to apply, you can do that. But when you go to a yoga society, we could go in our robes. Here's a monk, you know, Hare Krishna monk, he came from India, lives in India. You know, you walk in with your orange robes, I think, ooh, great. If they brought in some yogi from India with a big beard and all that, and big long, you know, shirt and everything, they'd all go, wow, great, authentic. Right? Because the people in there are professionals. They can distinguish, they have brains. Does that make sense? So this is, one has to look very, very carefully, you understand, to see what is the motive. So that's what we're trying to get at here, so that one is not just doing things and not thinking. Right? Does that make sense? On this there is a karika. The Vedas have said that the three qualities, goodness, passion, and ignorance, are the material qualities. The jiva is by nature without these qualities. When the jiva, because of his smallness, opposes the Lord and becomes weak, the material qualities become strong and overcome him. The knowledge that the jiva is spiritual and a servant of Krishna is covered, and because of the contact with material modes, the jiva falls into complete bondage of karma. By acceptance of the gross and subtle bodies, the jiva falls into the ocean of six material qualities, and becoming overwhelmed, experiences happiness and distress in the wheel of birth and death. This state of the pure jiva is called an unfortunate state of the jiva, imposed by maya. It exists due to the marginal quality inherent in the jiva. The jiva is actually a pure entity, and ignorance, the function of maya, is but an upadhi or temporary covering. The results of this upadhi are the three miseries, adiatmic, adidaivic, and adibhautic. Okay, so it's basically just saying the goodness, passion, and ignorance aren't inherent in the living entity. The living entity is transcendental. But because of this whole thing is his opposing the Lord, because he's so small and he opposes the Lord, therefore he becomes overwhelmed with Maya. If we were bigger, then it might be a different story. But we're not. So therefore we become overwhelmed by Maya. Yes? Yes.
So, as long as one is in the body, would he get affected? The miseries would be there?
The miseries will be there, but it doesn't necessarily bother you so much. The material world's always an annoyance. Because what are we looking, when we're saying happiness, what does that happiness mean? What are we looking for? Okay, yes, but let us say, okay.
Eternal happiness.
Yes, eternal happiness. But the thing is that happiness connected with any particular thing that's material? No. So therefore, one can always be in that state, but at the same time as one is going through the experience of what of adiatmic, adidaivic, adibhautic that comes from being in the material world in a material body. You know what I'm saying? It's two different things. Because we take it that it's one thing, that's where the problem is. Because if it's one, it means it's the kshetra. And so then the soul thinks he's the field of activities. Right? Because the field is all the elements in the field, so he identifies, I'm one of the elements in the field, so you are the field. But if he understands he's the observer of the field, the kshetra gya, then he's not disturbed in that same way. You know what I'm saying? Something may be painful, but it doesn't mean you have to become emotional about it. Right? So in that emotional state, there's a good chance you won't think of Krishna. But the devotee just remembers Krishna. Because he's dealing with inferior energy. It's Krishna's energy. So that's just the way this energy works. That's all. Does that make sense? It's just the way it is. It's nothing special. Even you improve the quality of it, still there's going to be distinction. You know, it's like iron or gold. Then what do you take? Okay, now let's say everything's gold, but now we have 14 carat, 18 carat, you know, 22 carat, 24 carat. Okay, so then like that, you can just keep going, right? There's something else. Okay, that's from here or from there, or, you know what I'm saying? We have the earthly gold. You know, does it have fragrance? No, but in the heavenly planets, it has a fragrance. You know, so it looks good and it smells good. So that means, okay, we got gold, everything's gold, but the heavenly gold's even better. You know what I'm saying? So that's why it doesn't, even you improve the standard, still there'll be the adiatmic, adidaivic, adibhautic. It may be very small, but because you're dealing with something very small, therefore it affects you like that. You know, like the story of the princess and the pea. That's 15 mattresses and one pea, right? And it's a problem for her, right? You take a brahmachari, you could have no mattress and one pea, and they wouldn't bother them at all. They'd be out cold, you know? And if they got one mattress, hey, they're in heaven, you know? So it's like, you know, you understand? In fact, you could probably bring a room full of peas, and the brahmachari could sleep on top of that quite fine. You understand? So it's just a matter of the standards, whatever it is. So it'll always be there. Only in the spiritual realm you don't have those things. You don't have, you know, thirst and lamentation and hunger and fatigue and all. You just don't have those. Does that make sense? Okay. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, can you please show in this verse 6 the Tatparya Lingas?
The Tatparya Lingas. The point is that's for a whole shastra, a work like that. But you Tatparya Lingas. Okay.
So those six ones.
The six? No, the six or the five?
Yes, I think it's six. Tatparya Lingas is six. Beginning and interpretation, uniqueness.
Okay, well, you have goodness, passion, and ignorance. You have here adiatmak, adidaivak, adibhautik. Jiva's without these qualities. At the end, it says the jiva is actually a pure entity. Jiva becomes covered there. You see that at the end. So we see that these are repeated. Okay, now Jiva, because of his smallness, he opposes the Lord. That's something that's brought out, this special, it's unique. It'd be there. Okay. Does that do? That's what I can remember.
Result.
Okay, well, the result is that because of his opposing the Lord, then he is bound by karma. Right? Like that. So that's basically, because this is about, and so he becomes bound by karma, and the result of that is then he suffers, you know, this adiatmak, adidaivak, adibhautik. Because here this chapter is then on the conditioned soul. The previous chapter was on the nature of the soul. So this is conditioned soul. Now this next chapter, which will start on Monday, then is the nature of the soul in the liberated state. How does your soul gets liberated and what is natural? I mean, the state of liberation is for it. You know, not necessarily the natural position of the soul. That will be naturally part of it. But this will be how the living entity reverses this process. So we see is from this chapter, then by forgetfulness of the Lord, by opposing the Lord, then the jiva becomes bound. So now we'll see in this chapter how it's the opposite. It appears. The natives are restless. Confirmed. Okay. Is that okay? Do we understand the whole idea of this morning's discussion and this discussion on this element of the opposing the Vedic is not for the purpose that we're trying to establish necessarily the form of the Vedic. We're trying to establish the principles of the Vedic. Those principles of the Vedic can be applied, you know, through any medium, you know, what's appropriate for a situation. Right? But to oppose those principles, that's wrong. Because most who are opposing the Vedic can't tell the difference between a principle and a detail anyway. That's the problem. They'll say the Vedic is a group of principles, which is true. But the point is its application is detail. Then we see in tradition. Tradition is what the advanced personalities, how they applied those principles, the form they used. That's the basis of tradition. Not a bad thing. Right? So that means according to the time, place, and circumstance, they applied it like that. One, those time, places, and circumstances, whether it's in a previous age or in present, or this part of the world or another, the situations are all the same. Right? In astrology, then you have a science called Prashna. This Prashna is basically divided into 10 questions. Right? Actually, I think it's 9, but they say 10. That means You mean these are 10 situations you could find yourself in, right? You know, basically gross, you know, it's like money problems, you know, family problems, work problems, health problems, you know, like this. Then those each have 10 breakdowns. Right? So you get finer details of that. Okay, money problem, money with the boss, money with your family, money with your wife, money with your son, money with the bank, money with you can't, you know, it fell out the bottom of your pocket. Money like this. Then there are 10 finer divisions of this. Right? So simple prashnas work with these 10. A little bit more elaborate ones, they work with 108. And the more fancy one like Bhrigu, that works with 1,008. But how does it work? Because it's only dealing with 10 situations that a living entity finds himself in for his adiatmak, adidaivak, and adibhautik. Does that make sense? So therefore, chewing the chewed, it's the same old thing. Therefore, it always applies. So this thing that we're so unique and special, what's so unique and special? Does that make sense? Right? So we're trying to just say is that it's time, place, and circumstance is not the problem. It's actually a Vedic concept. You're not applying the Vedic rules to time, place, and circumstance. You're not following Veda. That's why in the past, devotees' application of it many times failed because they weren't actually following it according to the rules of the Vedic culture. Right? Does that make sense? So that is what we're talking about avoiding. Right? It's not the form. They shouldn't make them because they take it that Vedic culture is a particular form and they can't see the principles. Therefore, when we talk about opposing that, they think we're trying to impose a particular form. We're not. Right? That's just their own fears being applied on others. But the point is it's if you understand these principles, and no matter what situation you're in, you'll be able to be Krishna conscious. Because let alone fighting over the pants and other kinds of things like that, that's not the big deal. The big deal is what do you do when you walk in the door of your own house? How is that being connected to Krishna? That's more relevant. You know? Whether it's a modern scenario or whether it's a Vedic scenario, what does it matter? How are you connecting that to Krishna? So if we sit around all day and arguing about pants and shirts, then how are we going to engage what's inside that house? Those relationships in the house, the interactions in the house, the reason we have the house, the moods and things that we're looking for, the happinesses that we're desiring, that we're going to get with that house and that family. How are you engaging that? That no one discusses. That's what we're trying to discuss. So all we're trying to do with this is break through something that keeps us from being able to look at it that way. Because otherwise you say, oh, you're being fanatic. But no. You have a couch. What's the nature of your couch? What kind of couch is it? How well do you maintain it? Right? Oh, we're being practical. We can't sit on the floor, Prabhu, you know, or near this, that, blah, 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 blah. They can just go on and on and on and not stop. Fine. But if it's Krishna's couch, are you taking care of it? Most of devotees' houses you go in looks like a bomb hit. And it's not because they don't have money, it's because they don't have any culture. Tick, tick, tick. You know what I'm saying? They don't take care. It's all Krishna's. But is it? If it's Krishna's, then take care of it. The temple car, what shape is it in? And that's Krishna's car. What shape is the temple president's car in? Oof, paka. Why? Because it's his car. But the temple car, you know, it's like, you know, if, what do you call it? The Keystone Cops were driving it, you know, it might fit. Why? Because they don't think it's Krishna's. If it was Krishna's, they'd take care of it. They'd take care of the building. They'd take care of everything because it's Krishna's. But they don't. So that's my point. And you go to everyone's house, it's the same. Because they don't actually see it in connection to Krishna. Otherwise, if it's Krishna's, why it's not clean? Krishna likes things clean. It would be clean. You know, we're not talking about whether you're cooking pasta or you're cooking rice dal. When you're cooking that, what methods are you following? Do you actually know cooking? You're cooking for Krishna, so do you know cooking? Hey, you've been around 30 years, you can't learn cooking? Oh, it's not important. Eating is Maya. Since when is eating Maya? It's prasad. That's spiritual. You understand? So this is the problem. This is what we're trying to cut through. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
I'm going to